Welcome to Blue Milk Special, Episode 4, for Monday, December 31st, 2012. In today's episode, we talk about Star Wars Christmas album and holiday specials. God help us all. You're listening to Rod Hanna,
Leanne Hanna,
and Kevin Kahn.
Welcome to episode 4 of Blue Milk Special. On November 17th, 1978, at 8 p.m., CBS aired what is now regarded as one of the worst pieces of television ever produced, the Star Wars Holiday Special. It kind of feels like Wookiee reality television, almost as if CBS accidentally anticipated the horror of reality television and showed us just how bad it could get.
Now then, what's that I smell? Gonna be some of those famous Wookiees?
This is the holiday edition of the podcast, so we decided to foolishly watch and review the infamous Star Wars Holiday Special, accompanied by plenty of beer and whiskey. But before we delve into the depths of the horror, I'd like to introduce today's guest, Andreas Owald.
Andreas is well known on the convention circuit as a Snake Eyes cosplayer from G.I. Joe. He was part of the FunnyOrDie.com video, The Ballad of G.I. Joe, starring such talents as Julianne Moore, Olivia Wilde, Zach Galifianakis, Laz Alonso, Vinnie Jones, and Henry Rollins, among others. Before we begin, Andreas, do you want to tell us your earliest Star Wars memories?
I was definitely too young to see it in the theater at the time. I think the first real experience was perhaps actually maybe seeing the movies on television, but my first real theater experience was when, you know, Return of the Jedi came out. And I was still living in Virginia. I've lived in Virginia pretty much all my life. And it was really cool, you know. Star Wars was just the thing, you know. It's like everybody loved Star Wars. I remember I had like a Star Wars lunchbox. I probably had the droids lunchbox. I had the action figures. Not a whole lot of them. The first Star Wars toy I actually had was like the X-Wing fighter. Yeah, I had that. I had the. I can't remember if it came with the Luke Skywalker pilot or it came. Okay, then I must. You know what? I don't even think I had the Luke Skywalker pilot. I had like a bounty hunter flying that thing, the robot with like the bug eyes. Yeah. But yeah, I totally dug it. You know, you watch the stuff years and you never really grow out of it. You cut on TV, you never switch the channel when it's on. So, yeah.
I just want to go on record that he says everyone is a fan of Star Wars. I just want to say I am not a fan. And I don't know why I'm here and they won't let me go. Please send help.
There you are. Well, if you come over here, you'll find a wonderful surprise. You'll have to plug into the central computer to hear what it is. That's right. No, it's not a phase vector. It's your Christmas present.
Christmas may have come and gone for another year, but the Star Wars Christmas and the Stars music will never leave you. Not everyone is familiar with the 1980s Star Wars album. It featured the song, What Can You Get a Wookiee for Christmas When He Already Has a Comb? Which somehow charted as high as 69 on the Billboard Hot 100.
That's what you get, a Wookiee for Christmas when he already owns a comb. So, that's what you get, a Wookiee for Christmas when he already owns a comb.
Some people might think the most interesting thing about the album is that it was Bon Jovi's first recorded singing work. Apparently, his brother was a co-producer working on the album, and Bon Jovi was a janitor at the studio, and somehow it all ended up happening. Anyway, he's the guy singing in between the child chorus and R2-D2, in case you were wondering.
Our chimney's big and round, so you can come right down. Our hearts will sing with glee as we decorate the Christmas tree.
thing I find most interesting, and the only thing worthy about the whole nightmare, is that Ralph McQuarrie, the Star Wars production artist, provided artwork, including the cover art, which is a beautiful Christmas scene in Santa's workshop filled with all the droids, and a lot of people have seen it online being posted around Christmas every year. But that's about it for my appreciation of this project, sadly. So what did you think about the Star Wars Christmas music that I was playing?
Well, Rod decided to turn the Christmas album on as Andreas and Kevin walked in our front door, and it was playing in the background as we were talking and things. And at one point I just, you know, stopped everyone and I said, "Rod, this music sounds like shit," because it was that bad. So that's basically my impression. You know, even through conversation, I noticed the music, but not for good reasons.
Now, over to our Star Wars news desk.
Many Bothans died to bring us this information.
The Lucasfilm acquisition by the Walt Disney Company was finalized on December 21st, 2012, which means Disney has now officially taken ownership of Star Wars. The company paid George Lucas $2.21 billion in cash and issued him 37.1 million shares of Disney stock. In an unofficial statement, Blue Milk Special said, "We look forward to being left alone to complete our parody." CNN reported that J.J. Abrams has confirmed he is officially out of the running for the Star Wars 7 director's chair. He remains committed to the Star Trek franchise. This is not a big surprise to most fans. Disney has announced that Star Wars Weekends for 2013 will take place every Friday, Saturday, and Sunday from May 17th to June 9th, 2013, at Disney's Hollywood Studios. The event will be hosted by the Clone Wars stars James Arnold Taylor and Ashley Eckstein, voice actors for Obi-Wan and Ahsoka Tano, respectively. They will take fans behind the Force during the live show.
The Star Wars Holiday Special.
So today we gathered with the idea of watching the Star Wars Holiday Special because we're all sadists. And Andreas, I don't think you'd seen it before.
This is the first time that I've actually seen it, I guess, in a state where I could actually sort of try to understand it. I think I saw it a long time ago when I was a kid, and, you know, back then, what was I, like three? I mean, did it really make any sense? No. Did it make any sense today? No. I really have no idea what the hell I just watched. I saw a lot of, like, emotion from Wookiees, and I still don't understand that. Yeah. You know, it's the weird thing about this holiday special is that, like, I've been drinking, but I don't think it's the alcohol that made this any trippier. Like, I would have thought I was drinking even without the alcohol. Yeah, it's something.
All right, well, we figured we'd have some drinks, see if it would help help ease the pain throughout the whole thing. No, it didn't really seem to do much. I know that Andreas was very quiet. He went very quiet. And I was like, oh no, he's internalizing the pain.
And then every once in a while, I would look over and see Kevin just shaking his head, or just being like, "What the hell is this?"
It was awful. I had seen this again when I was a kid, very little, three, and back then it made perfect sense. It totally made sense when you're a kid. But then I saw it again. Right, I bought a bootleg at a comic convention years back on video, and I'll never forget, I haven't said this, I got the video, and I was so excited, I ran home after the con, and it was, I got, you know, yeah, I'm gonna watch this, oh wow, and literally, after the first 10 minutes, I wonder why, I hated myself. I just hated the fact that I just wasted like $15 on this, and it was a pain to keep going. And kind of like today, we this should be an Olympic sport, is what I said. I think people need to train for this. So,
I mean, this is the longest I've ever sat through it because I've watched it in portions or I've skipped places, particularly where there's the song numbers. And we did do that today. Was it Deanne Carroll? I skipped through her.
We skipped through the Wookiee porn.
Did we did? Yes, that was what it was. That's what it was.
I am a freak, but I don't get off on that. Wookiee porn is not my thing. I don't know.
I exist for you. I am in your mind as you create me. Oh, yes. I can feel my creation. I'm getting your message. Are you getting mine? Oh, we are excited, aren't we?
And a lot of people actually haven't seen it, because I remember when we first did the parody of the holiday special, and, you know, not everyone has access to the bootleg, although it's, you can find it, both on YouTube and through torrent sharing sites. The scene that we were covering that week, we put up the segment of the holiday special YouTube clip to tie in, so some of our readers were introduced to it through our parody. But a lot of people listening to this may not actually know what the plot is, so... The plot seems to be really, really simple, but they stretch it over 2 hours. It's basically, you know, the actual actors from the original movie show up for this in cameo moments. But the majority of the film is about Chewbacca's family, his wife, his son, and his father, the grandfather Wookiee. And it's about them preparing for Life Day, which is a kind of Thanksgiving slash Christmas slash any holiday kind of thing with sort of spiritual... elements, and Chewbacca and Han Solo are trying to get to the planet Kashyyyk so he can be with his family to celebrate this event, and they use that as a framework to put in as many variety acts and song numbers as they can, and that's really the crux of it, I guess.
Our only hope now is to outrun that Imperial garbage scout. Now I'm going to lightspeed. That's the spirit. You'll be celebrating Life Day before you know it.
It opened with Han Solo and Chewbacca in the Falcon talking about what they're trying to do.
Yeah, and then it cuts to... So we have the opening, which is very cool in 70s in the sense of the Star Wars Holiday Special. It's like, you know, you're watching some... You know, you can clearly tell it's something that was made in the late 70s. And then they have a scene with dialogue with Han Solo and Chewbacca... And then they go to, what's the name of the Wookiee planet? Kashyyyk's. Kashyyyk. Anytime you need an alien sounding, you just add extra letters. And then we almost literally timed it to be about 7 straight minutes of Chewbacca's family talking to each other. Growling at each other for 7 straight minutes, no subtitles, miming the shit out of it, and yet we were still like, okay, I guess that's what they're doing, and I guess they're arguing there, and I guess the very odd, and I just can't believe whoever greenlit this is should have been shot. I'm sorry, it's bad, it's awful.
But one thing about that scene is it was kind of broken. They did break it up by having a Cirque du Soleil moment. So although you've got about 7 minutes of Wookiees just growling and a little Wookiee kid running around with a toy model X-Wing or whatever it is growling, we've got the Cirque du Soleil showing up in hologram form on a table. He's watching them jumping around doing trapeze acts. Yeah, I thought immediately, yes, they captured the exactly what Star Wars is right here. So,
then doesn't it cut to Mala talking to Luke Skywalker?
That's right. Yeah.
She talks to Luke Skywalker through a television-type thing, and he's dressed in his Rebel Pilot uniform. He has a bowl cut, heavy eyeliner, yeah, lipstick. He's... And he's trying to reassure her that, you know, Chewie will be coming back, not to worry, you know. And then R2 explodes next to him, and there's all this smoke, and I think it gets cut off.
Come on, don't look so worried. Now Chewie's not going to want to come home to a house full of long faces, is he?
Come on, Mala, let's see a little smile. Come on. There There, that's better. Try to enjoy your life day.
That's humor. Creepiness that every human in this is somehow like covered. Yeah, well, not only covered in makeup, but just like the whole Mala thing where he's just like, come on, Mala. Come on, give me that smile of yours. Come on. Like, you know, it's just like every human is all like, come on, give me a kiss, Mala. You know, she's covered head to toe in hair. Now, I am not a sexist, but that's just gross. I would not be but she's got boobs, hairy boobs. So why is it? Why are you? Come on, Mala, come on.
Obviously, they're furries. I mean, we've heard of furries, right?
Good to see you again. Don't say a word, madam. I know just why you're calling. You're wondering when that shaggy carpet you ordered will arrive at your home. Let me assure you, madam, it's on its way. You know, it was made especially for you by a little old woman 4 planets away. She did it all by herself. In fact, you might say she did it by hand. Solo.
And there's a scene partway through where Marla is trying to cook, and it cuts to, what's his name, Harvey Korman? Harvey Korman, he plays 3 roles in this. Variety, Harvey Keitel play. No, it's Harvey Korman. But he plays 3 different characters in this, in the little variety segments, and one of the first ones he plays is a chef, Chef Gourmander, I think, and the character is like heavily in drag, forearms, showing how to cook some kind of holiday meal, and Marla's trying to cook, and Andrea says, shouldn't she have a hairnet or something? It's like with all these arms waving around over the pot.
Yeah. Because she gets so into it, it's like she gets off on the stirring and the whisking of whatever she's doing, and like her hair comes out, like falls out of its bun or whatever it was, and
stir, whip, 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 stir. Come on, faster all together now. Cooking can be fun. Stir, whip, 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 stir. Wah! Having fun. All right? Coming along nicely now.
Who else does he play? He plays that weird robot android thing with the, it gets slowing down every few minutes and having to speed back up. I don't know what the hell that was about. I don't really understand that. There was one other character that he played, apparently.
In
the bar? The guy at the volcano head. Right. But Art Carney plays Sondan. Leanne, why do you say that?
Because anytime he says his name, you know, he introduces himself to somebody, he runs the 2 words together, so it's Sondan. Like, that's how he says it, so that's how I've always, anytime it comes on, I'm like, Sondan. And I think Rod's been doing custom figures lately, custom Star Wars figures, and this morning he said, you know, that he found himself imagining what he would do to make a custom Sondan. And then he caught himself and said, what the hell am I talking about?
My theory, the reason why Art Carney says it that way is, you know when you were a kid and you had to read from a book and you would come across a word you didn't know how to pronounce, so you would just rush it? I think that's what he was like. And you're just embarrassed to ask, so you're just like, so Art Carney was just like, hey everybody, it's me, Sundan. It's like in Army of Darkness, Klaatu, Varata, Nera. Yeah.
Sondan is some kind of trader who works on the Wookiee planet selling knickknacks, yeah. And he shows up with gifts for them.
Yeah, we're wondering if these guys are going to like bust ghosts or something because he actually arrives with a proton pack. Yes. Not the proton pack you're used to, but it's clearly called a proton pack.
Aichi, I brought you that proton pack, you know, for the what's this? What you might call it, the thingamabob. The mind evaporator, that's it, the mind evaporator.
When we did the parody, it was kind of exhausting doing it. So we did skip a few things, like the Cirque du Soleil, that wasn't represented in our parody. Chef Gourmander was not in our parody. So there's a few things that we skipped, but the proton pack, I completely missed that first time round. It doesn't look like a proton pack.
It turns out to be what the grandfather needs to work his porn machine.
That's true. And that's, I'm not making this up. The gift for the grandfather, this proton pack thing, it plugs into this kind of hair dryer, which is on the recliner, and the grandfather sits in it and pulls it down over his head.
Now then, Itchy, I thought you might like this. One of those, it's a real, it's kind of hard to explain. It's a, wow.
if you know what I mean. Happy Life Day.
I do mean Happy Life Day.
So he pulls on the hair dryer, and then Diane Carroll shows up, and oh my god. I mean, it really is a softcore porn that he's watching.
If the people who pitched this pitched it the way you, the both of you just said it, it was just like, okay, and then they got to operate his porn machine, and then they pull the hairdryer down. How was this made? That's all I keep thinking. Whenever we start talking about this, I keep wondering, how was this made? Because when you describe it, it's
really easy to make the porn machine, okay? So it's a hairdryer, right? And you tie it to a computer, and if you're listening, all it is just interactive porn on an SD card. That's the Proton Pack. Somebody licensed that right now.
But then we did skip through parts of the Diane Carroll's performance. She's singing, and she's wearing a skimpy kind of outfit, and she makes comments about how, you know, she'll be whatever he wants her to be, and she's, you know, that's the fantasy and his fantasy and things. And then there's a part where she tells him how she thinks he's so adorable, and it cuts to the grandfather, you know, clearly getting off on this, and he rewinds that like several times, her saying how she finds him so adorable.
Seriously, the pacing is so slow. The thing that made Star Wars a huge success, you know, the Star Destroyer flying over your heads in a theater, action and quick cuts and wipe, it's the inverse of that. It's just 7 minutes of Wookiees growling, grandfather Wookiee growling to a porn machine, which is Diane Carroll singing to. Then we've got a chef showing Marla how to cook. And then we have Jefferson's Airplane show up, which is probably one of the better segments because it's actually 70s rock. Although it's bizarre. I mean, partway through they start cutting back to Art Carney, who's playing Sondheim, and some Imperial Navy fleet trooper or whatever they're called, who are searching the Barker household for anything which looks like it could be related to Rebel or Alliance material. So he distracts this guard with this MTV-style video, prior to MTV, of Jefferson's Airplane playing with what looks like a microphone designed to look like a lightsaber, but it looks like a dildo. It's like a lot of silhouettes, a lot of hot pink backgrounds causing a silhouette of the singer holding this big dildo to his mouth. And it actually is like a lightsaber. It's pink.
You mentioned, a couple of things. One, I'm now starting to think, after you said the Bacchas, I now think this was actually a trial to make a spinoff sitcom called The Bacchas, which I would totally watch. But number two, you said how it like dragged out or whatever, and it reminded me of anybody who's never seen the show, highly recommend watching a British comedy called Garth Marenghi's Dark Place, where it's a parody of an 80s show, and there's a scene in slow motion, and they always splice the fake footage back from the fake sitcom with fake interviews, and Richard Ayoade, who's a great actor, says, the show was running always under 22 minutes, so we had to add slow motion to a lot of scenes. That's what this feels like. When I thought of this is when literally 1 minute of this holiday special is Mala, Chewbacca's wife, pressing buttons, and then you just having the camera on a computer screen as different like numbers come up and warning, and like there's no image. It's just made up letters and numbers for 1 minute. Many Bothans died to produce this 1 minute of footage. It's awful.
Yeah, it really is. I'm trying to get back to the, I wouldn't call it plot, but the sequence of scenes, the sequence of bizarre trips that are happening one after the other.
The cut footage of Vader walking down the corridor.
Right. In order to try and give some sense of bad guys and tension, they have Vader show up. But it's a scene which was cut from A New Hope, where Vader's walking through the Death Star hallway with Chief Bast, played by Leslie Schofield. And they've dubbed over the original dialogue. So it's an American voice actor doing the Imperial officer voice. And they're basically talking about how, we're worried about this blockade around Kashyyyk right now. And we've ordered for all the Wookiee households to be searched. And I think everybody burst out laughing.
We started a search operation. It's just a matter of time before we find the rebels.
I want the rebels located and identified, if it means searching every household in the system.
Darth Vader should never utter the word household or homeowner. That should not come from the mouth of Darth Vader. I do not, unless it's a show called Darth Vader Real Estate Agent, I do not want to watch. It was weird, right, to hear him say that.
The landlord of the Sith. That's pretty much any time Darth Vader shows up in it. One of the big pieces of tension and suspense throughout this is Marla worrying about where Chewbacca is because he hasn't shown up yet. He's late for the life day. So first she calls Luke, and she wants to know if Luke knows where they are. Then she calls Leia, and Leia's with C-3PO, and the C-3PO translates for her, which makes me wonder how Luke was able to understand what she was saying. Not that we should be talking about logic problems in this, but...
I was totally into the movie until that point, and then it just jumped the Wookiee.
Marla, it's so good to see you. Happy Life Day.
She says it may be a happy life day for you, but personally, she's seen happier ones.
I don't want to tie up the channels. So could you do me a favor and send either Chewbacca or Han Solo to the screen, please?
Also, in her scenes, Carrie Fisher is clearly high as she's filming, her dialogue.
It's the only time I've ever seen her like that. And towards the end, a bit of a spoiler, Princess Leia comes out during the actual Life Day ceremony and sings the Life Day song, which is Carrie Fisher singing. That in itself was blew my mind when I first saw it. So Marla is busy stressing about where Chewbacca is, and he finally shows up. Han and Chewie, they get close to the planet. They see there's this blockade of Imperial ships around Kashyyyk. So to get around the blockade, Han says, "I'll land on the north side of the planet." And I'm like, what the f*** does that mean?
Never seen so much Imperial traffic in this system. Better land on the north side, it'll be safer there. So it's a long walk. A little exercise never hurt anybody.
That just drive around the back of the house, because we'll get out and we'll walk through the forest, because they're gigantic Andor trees.
Commander, did you surround the planet? Yes, Lord Vader, I did. Even the north side of the planet. Oh shit! We might as well just choke me right now, because I didn't.
Actually, when Harrison shows up, the Imperials who have come in to search the Wookiee household, they've left behind a stormtrooper. So when Solo shows up, he's out on the balcony outside, and he sees the stormtrooper. And he gets into this kind of jostling session with the stormtrooper, and I was kind of blanking when it was happening, but he trips a stormtrooper up over his own gun.
It's so odd. It's almost like every movie you see where a guy's looking at a reflection of himself, trying to verify if it's actually the person, like his reflection or somebody else. It was like he was staring at a stormtrooper who thought the stormtrooper was him, and like he's moving to the left, he's moving to the right, and then like the stormtrooper trips over his freaking rifle and falls over the railing. And I'm just like, what the hell just happened here?
Well, and also, let's rewind it just a smidge. He had a gun. He was holding it. He was pointing it at Chewie. And then Chewie, mind you, Chewie, I think, kind of moved his own son in front of him to be like, here, just shoot the kid. He's annoying. He's Adam Rich from Eight is Enough. Look it up. He's, and then Han Solo's behind the stormtrooper like, I got this. And then, then becomes the interpretive dance scene. And then he trips and falls, and it's ridiculous. Yeah.
Starlog 324-1 from the bridge of the cruiser RS Revenge, Captain Kazahan reporting.
Yeah, and actually, I was skipping something. One of the segments which is somewhat more bearable and entertaining is the animated sequence, which introduces Boba Fett. And that happens before Han and Chewie show up. So just skipping back to that, that was animated by Nelvana, a Canadian animation company. and the segment is basically an actual story as opposed to the holiday special. It's got a plot. It's got Luke, C-3PO, R2-D2, Chewie, Han, and it's introducing Boba Fett. So it's 2 years prior to his appearance in Empire Strikes Back, and he's got slightly more cartoony colors. And there's a few bizarre moments in it. The first really bizarre moment is the Millennium Falcon is supposed to be coming back to the Rebel asteroid base, which in Blue Milk Special we called Little Alderaan. And it's out of control. Chewbacca won't respond to the messages being sent to him by Princess Leia. And when she finally does get through, when the static clears on the screen, you see in the background of the cockpit, Han Solo is hanging, kind of swinging, dangling upside down, kind of bound, not quite gagged, as we had in the strip. But that's just like, I've watched a lot of cartoons as a kid. I've never seen anything that weird in a cartoon before. I don't understand. I mean, maybe because it was so truncated into like an 8-minute short, they just didn't have time to expand upon everything. But Andreas asked why that was, why he was hanging upside down. And I might have missed it. I think the first time around when I saw it, I thought they said something about getting blood to the head to try and keep them awake because they'd caught like a sleeping virus. I don't remember catching it this time around. Maybe I just tried to apply logic to this thing. Not that blood, that works very well, because you hang someone upside down for too long, they're going to die. So that was the first really weird thing. But the next thing was, and this is towards the end, Boba Fett, he talked to Darth Vader when he was in the city trying to get a cure for the sleeping virus, which was affecting Luke and Han. And C-3PO and R2-D2 back at the Millennium Falcon pick this up. So they know that Boba Fett is really working with Darth Vader and ready to turn them over. So when Boba Fett arrives back at the Falcon with Chewie and he cures Luke and Han, and they get up off the floor, and Boba Fett's clearly holding a gun on them, C-3PO says, "No, oh, really? We just picked up a message. And it shows that he's not really as faithful of a friend as we thought." They talk about the fact that he was going to betray them, and Boba Fett, he backs away towards the door. He's got a gun trained on them, and he says, "Well, very well, until we meet again," and backs off, and he flies out of the Falcon. And I'm like, what the f*** is that? You had a gun on them. And then Kevin made the really good point.
I said that there's a deleted scene, animated scene of him flying in the air a couple of seconds later, and all you would hear is, like, you know, the sound of the jetpack, and all of a sudden you'd hear, "Oh, f***!" As the realization hit him that he had a gun pointed at them.
I mean, it's full of stuff like that. That it's really random, unthought out, just slapped together stuff. There's makeup on Mark Hamill, as we mentioned earlier. It's like, it's variety show makeup, I guess. It's like a different kind of production, and they didn't try and make him look like Luke.
For years, I did not know. I thought, because if for anybody who is familiar with like the history around Star Wars and the actors, around, I thought before the holiday special, but as I was informed, this actually happened after the holiday special, is that Mark Hamill was in a car accident and busted up his nose and such. And I think that's also partially why in Empire he and after that kind of looks different with the Wampa attack or whatever. But I thought that's why the makeup looks so bad. It's awful. Google Mark Hamill Star Wars Holiday Special. I'm sure they'll show the still. So, oh, by the way, Rod, come on, smile a little bit for me. Come on.
Yeah, that was kind of creepy. Steve Bender is the director of this. And apparently the original director was a film school friend of George Lucas's. But this friend of his pulled out of the project because he realized, I'm assuming, that it was not going to be what George and he himself may have envisioned. So Steve Bender took it on. And I love the impersonation that Kevin gave of the director being frustrated with what was happening. It's one of those things which is kind of unspoken, where the director is just waving his hands around, you know, like, just keep rolling. I've got no control over this. So anyway, back to the story. Han Solo and Chewie show back up, and this big, long, drawn-out hug sequence and staring at each other, and so Harrison Ford looks really uncomfortable. I'm missing one more scene. Again, during the search of the Wookiee household by these Imperial officers, I think it happens during this, or right after, there's like a curfew notice from the Empire, because the Empire has obviously a division or garrison on this planet, and they announce there's a curfew, and that in order to give people a guide on how to behave during a curfew, they play a sequence of Life on Tatooine, starring Bea Arthur as the bartender of the Mos Eisley Cantina.
Just one more round, friend, then homeward bound, friend, don't forget me in your dreams. Just one more song, friend, and then so long, friend, the nights get shorter, it seems.
It's just an excuse to basically have another musical number using the Cantina Band and every other alien that they could get their hands on. What was this? It was Harvey Keitel. I wish it was. In fact, I mean, the thing with Blue Monk Special is we can do that. If we want to just change it for the hell of it, we can suddenly have a Harvey Keitel. But Harvey Korman, during this, he interacts with Bea Arthur. He's a main human character, humanish character, because he's got a volcano head. Basically, he's in love with Bea's character, which is Akmina. That's her name. She has a thing that she says to every patron that comes in, and I can't remember what it is now. It's not really worth remembering. Something like goodbye, friend, or
something about come back, and next time I'll be waiting. Yeah.
So this guy, Harvey Keitel, he overheard her saying this, and he thought she was coming on to him or whatever when he first heard her use that phrase, but she says it to everybody. So there's this really drawn-out sequence between the two of them where he's trying to tell her how much he loves her, and she's trying to get him the hell off of her.
Listen, Krell, you're kind and sweet and terribly attractive, but if you're saying what I think you're saying, you felt you meant, I thought you needed to hear, then I just have one thing to say, I did not.
Akmina, don't do this to me.
Now, please, look, I have customers. Why don't you sit down, finish your drink, have another drink. This one's on me.
The one thing I remember the most from that scene is he's got this really high-domed sort of prosthetic thing on his head, like a kind of wig, which is like in a volcano kind of shape. And partway through, he leans forward and she pours a jug of, I don't know, blue milk or something into his head, which is just so weird. Everything is so weird.
It's because, again, clearly all of this, even like, you know, the Wookiees, the Jeffersons, airplane starship scene, every scene with Harvey Korman, Keitel, it has people going, yeah, that's Star Wars thing. Yeah, sure, I know how to do that. Sure, we'll just put some put a volcano head on top of him. That'll be, that's Star Wars, right? That's like, it clearly was operated, the majority of people did not know what the heck they were doing. And I guess an example which I was going to bring up, which I said during, was, you know, with the Cantina scene, you know, where in order to make this, oh, well, this is a Star Wars holiday special, so we'll add elements that people will remember of Star Wars. We'll get the actors in and whatever. But the majority of this is not Star Wars. It's like characters we have never met before. But the one part was the Cantina scene where it's just like my little bit of like pitching it was the cabaret. It's cabaret meets Star Wars scene where it's just like, you know, in Star Wars where they've got the Cantina scene. We're going to see that song, except this time I'm going to tweak a little bit like. See, it's totally different. What are you, Vanilla Ice? Like, it's like exactly what he said about when he was being sued by Queen. No. It was, there's this dun 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 dun, and mine's dun 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 dun. It's like, it's exactly it with this. It's awful. It's an awful. Everything is awful.
It feels like at the beginning with Lumpy, the son running around, that it's aimed at 3-year-olds or maybe slow 4-year-olds, you know what I mean? Like, it's like a kid running around growling, there's no dialogue, just waving around a toy around, watching Cirque du Soleil and hologram, doing the kinds of things I would have done as a kid. Yeah, Cirque du Soleil and hologram. Yeah, so at that point you think, okay, they're aiming this at kids, but then you have the grandfather watching softcore porn. They're just cutting away whenever she's giving him the striptease. You were just, I was looking around to see where the Kleenex box was. There's something really, really messed up in the thinking, the way you'd piece those things together. And it ends up concluding with Han leaves him. He gets the hell out of there as soon as he can. So Chewie and his family, they all march in a train over to the cabinet where they get like some kind of candles, and then they march back towards the middle of the living room. And then they hold the candles up and there's a lens flare, like J.J. Abrams. And then they spacewalk through the deep space. Suddenly, you know, they're in deep space walking towards a star, and they're in red robes suddenly too. And then suddenly, I don't know if they're on some other part of Kashyyyk or if they're in some other part of the galaxy, but there's a bunch of Wookiees from all over. So they've got maybe 20 Wookiee extras with red robes. C-3PO and R2-D2 show up, and then Princess Leia comes running out, gives him a hug because she is really happy, really happy right now.
I remember that one scene where she was rubbing Chewie going, "You're so furry! You're so furry! God, she's so furry, isn't she? Everyone's furry."
And so then you got Luke and you got Han and everybody's together. And so she goes into the song. She is the final song. And I mentioned it earlier. The last thing I expected was Carrie Fisher singing some kind of bullshit Life Day song.
This is the promise of the Tree of Life. We celebrate a day of peace, a day of harmony.
And that's really how it ends. It cut there, our version, and there was an inserted Kenner toy commercial. And I thought, oh, okay, so that it ended on a shot of Chewbacca's face, and then it cut to commercial, and that's it. And we were like, okay.
It ended with Chewbacca's face looking duh. And during the duh moment, they play you again, trying to make this be, see, this is Star Wars. They have Chewbacca looking duh, and then on the left side, and on the right side, they're showing you clips, snippets from the movie Star Wars, as if to say Chewbacca is there. Remember the time when we just did this a few months ago? Remember the time when we were on Tatooine and we met that old man? Remember the time that we weren't in the Death Star, but they're clearly showing footage of the Death Star? Just, you know, remember the time the TIE fighter flew in front of us? And then that, just again, it was this like, yeah, see kids, this is Star Wars. It was awful.
So then it cuts to the Kenner commercial, and we thought that flashback sequence of Chewbacca with a close-up of his head, and it was like a composite image, you know, in the background, you can see his memories and everything. We thought it was over, but no. After the Kenner commercial, it cuts to a shot of their house, which is a really obvious matte painting. It's supposed to pass for an actual... Look, I mean, I know... matte paintings are tough and everything. I'm trying to give the guy credit. Look. Let me look at it. Okay, it's based on Ralph McQuarrie's concept art for the Wookiee house up in the treetops, which is what inspired the Ewoks. You know, they gave up on the Wookiees after the holiday special for a good reason, I guess.
Sorry. We have this Blue Book special is now brought to you in part by matte painters. Do you need a house but can't afford it? Then call Matt Painters and we'll paint your house that almost looks real. You can't walk inside.
Out of Darth Landlord scheme. Yeah, so it cuts back to a shot of the household and the family are inside sitting around a table and they all sort of lower their heads in prayer. But they lower it over a three-minute sequence.
Sorry, it looks like a mass suicide. Like they took pills and they were like laying down. They drank the Kool-Aid.
Maybe they just kind of came out of the high and realized what had just transpired in the last 24 hours. Like, oh, shit. So then it finally cuts the credits. Anyway, so the credits are rolling, and I think we'll get Kevin to speak over them. Do you have any closing thoughts, Andreas, about, you know, having seen the whole thing now?
I still don't know what the hell I was watching. I really don't. And, you know, there are certain films that rank up there as far as being, like, the worst films out there. Like, I don't know if you've ever seen this one film called The Room.
Yes.
You've seen it. You know what I'm talking about. If you had to compare. Tough?
The Room has at least has either... thanks to Adult Swim or just the viewings of it, it reaches that level of so bad it's good where, again, describing my first experience watching the Star Wars Holiday Special, the first, like, I was excited and I knew that it was going to be bad, but it just instantly
goes from just bad to worse, and then you're just angry about it. Whereas The Room is just, it's funny, just to, you know, oh, hello, lady, or whatever the heck he says.
Yeah, yeah, this viewing was just, it was so bad, it was just so bad. It's pretty much, you know, honestly, I think if people were watching this back then, you know, high and whatnot, it was probably the inspiration for Spaceballs. Seriously, it could have been. Because it's kind of, it has stuff that is Star Wars, but not exactly Star Wars. And this was like the attempt at making Spaceballs, but it just didn't pan out back then. It was just, it couldn't be done.
I think I've interrupted enough to tell you how I feel about the show. But yeah, just bad. Just head shaking bad.
Yeah, I pretty much agree with it, with what everybody has said. A couple years ago when we were doing the parody, so we actually had to watch the holiday special, was the first time I think I had seen it. And I knew it was, I heard it was bad, but to hear that it's bad and to watch it and experience it, two completely different things, because it is awful. It's anything you can think of as being horrible, it's worse.
I mean, there are some things that I could really waste my time watching, and at least Mark Hamill and Carrie Fisher and Harrison Ford. I mean, you see Harrison Ford doing something he's really uncomfortable doing, but he's dressed as Han Solo and he's playing the character. That's really cool, I think. There are little things in there which just manage to keep people going. I mean, it's easier when you can skip scenes. This is the first time I've watched it where I've only skipped about two sections, and we'd watched most of Diane Carroll's piece before I started skipping. I maybe skipped a minute out of that, just a song. And then I skipped another piece. I can't remember exactly what it was, but it was really minimal. So this is the most full viewing I've ever had of it. I was trying to make it an event for the four of us so that we could really comment on the whole thing, but I really pitied everybody sitting around here. I was like, what am I doing? They're going to hate me.
You'll change your mind. I just know you will. Six simple little words. I can wait forever to hear it again because I know...
Come back soon. I'll be waiting.
Closing, there's actually a good quote. It's on the Wikipedia page to do with the reception for the holiday special. On a TV Land special entitled The 100 Most Unexpected TV Moments, Ralph Garman, who's a voice actor for the Family Guy show, he explained that the Star Wars holiday special is one of the most infamous television programs in history, and it's so bad that it actually comes around to good again, but passes it right up. And that's true. The holiday special is done as light entertainment. It's supposed to be funny in places, but it's not funny for those reasons. It's funny for where it fails.
This is one life they won't soon forget.
I like things about the holiday special. What I like is Akmina by B. Arthur. I don't like the fact that it's camp and silly, but I like the idea that the character like Akmina could be somebody who works at the cantina. It's a really weird thing, I guess, to think that. But there's a bouncer called Torque. There's a little sidekick called Akmina's sidekick. She's like a midget, maybe 2 foot tall. I don't know, tiny little thing. just really small. But previously, there's just Werher the bartender. And it's kind of neat to think of the cantina as having a little bit more personalities to it. And yeah, I don't know. I'm making action figure customs of Akmina. So I'm trying to make a B. Arthur, basically.
Could you make me the other Golden Girls?
Yeah. Put them in, like, cantina garb.
Fun note, if you want to sober up fast, watch the Star Wars Holiday Special. Because I've been drinking, and it hasn't helped.
I've gone through about four Yinglings, and this thing is like a two-hour video or production, and it didn't help. I mean, I know I'm a big guy, but even still, like, yeah.
Would you recommend any different...
No, more Yingling.
Yeah. I've been drinking Jack Daniel's original recipe, Tennessee Honey. Finely crafted honey liqueur blended with Jack Daniel's Tennessee Whiskey. Whiskey. Sandwich Whiskey. Transformers.
I have also been drinking Yingling. I think I'm almost done with my third. I think, and nothing. I mean, it didn't do anything.
I only had the tiniest sip of the Jack Daniels, and the reason is I'm actually doing the drug thing. I'm on a bunch of pain meds, so I think they constitute some kind of trip experience. So that hasn't really helped either, I don't think. Maybe a little bit. Sometimes it tends to perk my mood up a little bit and maybe more receptive of it. But yeah.
Actually, the truth is the drugs are working, Rod, because there is no holiday special. This has all been in your mind.
Wait, you guys have just been watching me this whole time? I think on that note, I think we need to end right now. Until next time, I've been Rod.
I am Leanne.
I am your father. I mean, I am Kevin.
And I'm Andreas.
Have a great new year, and we'll see you in 2013.
Oh, f*** you. F*** you. F*** you and you. You. F*** you.
Music by Roscoe Lewis, and you can find more of his work at day3creations.co.uk. For more information about Blue Milk Special, you can go to bluemilkspecial.com.